Garage Band. The Jobs house in Los Altos became the assembly point for the 50 Apple I boards that had to be delivered to the bike shop within 30 days when the payment for the parts would come due. All available hands were enlisted. Jobs and Wozniak, plus Daniel Kottke, his ex-girlfriend Elizabeth Holmes, who had broken away from the cult she had joined, and Jobs's pregnant sister, Patty. Her vacated bedroom, as well as the kitchen table and garage, were commandeered as workspace. Holmes, who had taken jewelry classes, was given the task of soldering chips. "Most I did well, but I got flux on a few of them," she recalled. This didn't please Jobs. "We don't have a chip to spare," he railed correctly. He shifted her to bookkeeping and paperwork at the kitchen table, and he did the soldering himself. When they completed a board, they would hand it off to Wozniak. "I would plug each assembled board into the TV and keyboard to test to see if it worked," he said. "If it did, I put it in a box. If it didn't, I'd figure what pin hadn't gotten into the socket right." Paul Jobs suspended his sideline of repairing old cars so that the Apple team could have the whole garage. He put in a long old workbench, hung a schematic of the computer on the new plasterboard wall he built, and set up rows of labeled drawers for the components. He also built a burn box bathed in heat lamps so the computer boards could be tested by running overnight at high temperatures. When there was the occasional eruption of temper, an occurrence not uncommon around his son, Paul would impart some of his calm. "What's the matter?" he would say. "You got a feather up your ass?" In return, he occasionally asked to borrow back the TV set, which was the only one in the house, so he could watch the end of a football game. During some of these breaks, Jobs and Kottke would go outside and play guitar on the lawn. Clara Jobs didn't mind losing most of her house to piles of parts and houseguests, but she was frustrated by her son's increasingly quirky diets. She would roll her eyes at his latest eating obsessions, recalled Holmes. She just wanted him to be healthy, and he would be making weird pronouncements like, "I'm a fruitarian, and I will only eat leaves picked by virgins in the moonlight." After a dozen assembled boards had been approved by Wozniak, Jobs drove them over to the bike shop. Terrell was a bit taken aback. There was no power supply, case, monitor, or keyboard. He had expected something more finished, but Jobs stared him down, and he agreed to take delivery and pay. After 30 days, Apple was on the verge of being profitable. "We were able to build the boards more cheaply than we thought because I got a good deal on parts," Jobs recalled. "So the 50 we sold to the bike shop almost paid for all the material we needed to make 100 boards." Now they could make a real profit by selling the remaining 50 to their friends and homebrew compatriots. Elizabeth Holmes officially became the part-time bookkeeper at $4 an hour, driving down from San Francisco once a week and figuring out how to port Jobs' checkbook into a ledger. In order to seem like a real company, Jobs hired an answering service, which would relay messages to his mother. Ron Wayne drew a logo, using the ornate line-drawing style of Victorian illustrated fiction that featured Newton sitting under a tree framed by a quote from Wordsworth, "A mind forever voyaging through strange seas of thought alone." It was a rather odd motto, one that fit Wayne's self-image more than Apple Computer. Perhaps a better Wordsworth line would have been the poet's description of those involved in the start of the French Revolution. "Bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, but to be young was very heaven." As Wozniak later exalted, "We were participating in the biggest revolution that had ever happened," I thought. "I was so happy to be a part of it." Woz had already begun thinking about the next version of the machine, so they started calling their current model the Apple I. Jobs and Woz would drive up and down Camino Real, trying to get the electronics stores to sell it. In addition to the 50 sold by the bite shop and almost 50 sold to friends, they were building another 100 for retail outlets. Not surprisingly, they had contradictory impulses. Wozniak wanted to sell them for about what it cost to build them, but Jobs wanted to make a serious profit. Jobs prevailed. He picked a retail price that was about 3 times what it cost to build the boards and a 33% markup over the $500 wholesale price that Terrell and other stores paid. The result was $666.66. "I was always into repeating digits," Wozniak said. "The phone number for my dial-a-joke service was 255-6666. Neither of them knew that in the Book of Revelation, 666 symbolized the number of the beast, but they soon were faced with complaints, especially after 666 was featured in that year's hit movie, The Omen. In 2010, one of the original Apple I computers was sold at auction by Christie's for $213,000. The first feature story on the new machine appeared in the July 1976 issue of Interface, a now-defunct hobbyist magazine. Jobs and friends were still making them by hand in his house, but the article referred to him as the director of marketing and a former private consultant to Atari. It made Apple sound like a real company. Steve communicates with many of the computer clubs to keep his finger on the heartbeat of this young industry, the article reported, and it quoted him explaining, "If we can rap about their needs, feelings, and motivations, we can respond appropriately by giving them what they want." By this time, they had other competitors, in addition to the Altair, most notably the IMSAI 8080, and Processor Technology Corporation's Sol 20. The latter was designed by Lee Felsenstein and Gordon French of the Homebrew Computer Club. They all had the chance to go on display during Labor Day weekend of 1976 at the first annual Personal Computer Festival held in a tired hotel on the decaying boardwalk of Atlantic City, New Jersey. Jobs and Wozniak took a TWA flight to Philadelphia, cradling one cigar box with the Apple I and another with the prototype for the successor that Woz was working on. Sitting in the row behind them was Felsenstein, who looked at the Apple I and pronounced it thoroughly unimpressive. Wozniak was unnerved by the conversation in the row behind him. "We could hear them talking in advanced business talk," he recalled, "using business-like acronyms we'd never heard before." Wozniak spent most of his time in their hotel room tweaking his new prototype. He was too shy to stand at the card table that Apple had been assigned near the back of the exhibition hall. Daniel Kottke had taken the train down from Manhattan, where he was now attending Columbia, and he manned the table while Jobs walked the floor to inspect the competition. What he saw did not impress him. Wozniak, he felt reassured, was the best circuit engineer, and the Apple I, and surely its successor, could beat the competition in terms of functionality. However, the Sol 20 was better looking. It had a sleek metal case, a keyboard, a power supply, and cables. It looked like it had been produced by grown-ups. The Apple I, on the other hand, appeared as scruffy as its creators.